Chapter 17. Ever wish you had an almanac? I did, that night. I had no idea what time the moon was supposed to rise, and I hadn't exactly had time to run to the library or a bookstore. I knew that it was supposed to happen an hour or so after sundown, but the way the clouds rolled in made it uncertain exactly when sundown had happened. Did I have 20 minutes? 10? An hour? Or was I already too late? As I climbed the stairs, I thought about being alone in a building with McFinn after he had changed. For all my vaunted wizard's knowledge, I had no real idea of his capabilities. After seeing Kim's body, I had something of an idea of what he could do. Bob had said that Loop Guru were fast, strong, virtually immune to magic. What could I do against something like that? I just had to pray that I would be able to get the circle up around McFinn before I had to find out. I checked the bucket to make sure I still had the chalk and the stones I would need to construct the greater circle around McFinn. You didn't necessarily have to make them out of silver and gold and whatnot. Mostly, you just had to understand how the construct channeled the forces that were being employed. If you knew that, you could figure out how to make it out of less pure materials. The very best wizards don't need much more than chalk, table salt, and a wooden spoon to pull off some remarkable stuff. My thoughts were rambling now, panic making them scamper around like a frightened chipmunk. That was bad. I needed focus, direction, concentration. I drove my legs a little harder, went up the stairs as fast as I dared until I came out on the fifth floor. The door to the special investigations was 10 feet down the hall. The holding cells were down the hall and around the corner, and I started that way at once. "What do you mean you can't find him?" Murphy's voice demanded as I walked past the office door. "Just that. The men on his apartment said they kept a real good eye on the place, but he got in and out without them seeing anything." Carmichael's voice was tired, frustrated. Murphy snorted. "Christ, Carmichael! Is Dresden going to walk right into the office before you find him?" I hurried past the door and round the hall. Tempting as it was to listen to a conversation about myself without the participants knowing, I just didn't have time. I wheeled my wobbling, squeaky bucket down the hall, half jogging in my hurry. Holding was set up, unsurprisingly, behind bars. There was a swinging barred door that the station guard had to buzz open if he didn't have a key. Beyond that was a sort of an antechamber with a couple of wooden chairs and not much else, beside a counter with a window made of bulletproof glass. The jailer sat behind the glass at his desk, his expression baggy-eyed and bored. Past the jailer's window was another door, made of steel, with a tiny little window, which led to a row of cells. The jailer had the controls to that door at his desk as well. I went to the first barred door, kept my head down, and rapped on the metal slats. I waited for a while, but nothing happened, so I rapped on the bars again. It occurred to me that it would add a nice touch of irony if the same blending potion that got me into the building also kept me from being noticed by the jailer and let inside. I rapped on the bars again, harder this time, with a shaft of my wooden mop. It took some determined rapping to get him to look up from his magazine, but he finally did, and peered at me through thick glasses. His colors swirled and gained a bit of tint before settling back toward gray. He frowned at me, glanced back at the calendar on the wall, and then pushed the button. The barred door buzzed, and I shoved it open with my bucket, wheeling inside with my head down. "You're early this week," the jailer said, his eyes back on the magazine. "Out of town on Friday. Trying to get done sooner," I replied. I kept my voice in a monotone, as gray and boring as I could manage. To my surprise, it came out as I intended it. I'm usually not much of a liar or an actor, so the potion must have been helping me on some subtle or devious level. One thing I'll say for Bob, he's annoying as hell, but he knows his stuff. "Whatever, sign here," the jailer said in a bored tone, and shoved a clipboard and a pen at me through the slot at the base of the plexiglass window. He turned a page in his magazine, showing me a picture of an athletic-looking young woman doing something anatomically improbable with an equally improbable young man. I hesitated. how the hell was I supposed to sign in and out? I mean, Bob's potion may have been good, but it wasn't going to change a signature after I put it on paper. I glanced at the inner door and then back at the wall. To hell with it. I didn't have time to hang around. I went over to the counter and scribbled something unreadable on the admissions sheet. "Have any trouble tonight?" I asked. The jailer snorted, turning his magazine to the right by 90 degrees. "Just that rich guy they brought in earlier. He was yelling for a while, but he's shut up now. Probably coming down off whatever he was on." He collected the clipboard, gave it a perfunctory glance, and hung it back up on its peg beside a bank of black and white monitors. I leaned closer to the monitors, sweeping my eyes over them. Each was apparently receiving a signal from a security camera because each one of them displayed a scene that was exactly the same, except the actors in it. A small cell, maybe 8 feet by 8, with bars serving as one wall, smooth concrete for the other three, a bunk, a toilet, and a single door. Maybe 2/3 of the monitors had a strip of masking tape stuck to the lower right-hand corner of the screen, with a name like Hansen or Washington written in black marker. I frantically scanned the bank of monitors until, in the lower corner, I found the one that said Mac Finn. I looked at his monitor. The video was blurred, flecked with snow and static, but I could see well enough what had happened. The cell was empty. Concrete dust drifted in the air. The wall of bars was missing, apparently torn from the concrete and allowed to fall away. I could see the scraps of McFinn's denim shorts laying on the floor of the cell. "Hell's bells," I swore softly. There was a flicker of motion on another monitor, the one next to McFinn's. The tape at the bottom of the screen read Matson, and a starved-looking, unshaven man in sleeveless white undershirt and blue jeans could be seen curled up on the bunk, his back pressed to the rear corner of the cell. His mouth was open and his chest straining as though he were screaming, but I could hear nothing through the thick security door and the concrete walls. There was a flicker of motion, a huge and furry shape on the camera, out of focus, and Matson threw up his skinny arms to protect himself as something huge and quick shoved its way between the bars, like a big dog going through a rotting picket fence, and engulfed him. There was a burst of static and violent motion, and then a spattering of black on the gray walls and floor of the cell, as though someone had shaken up a cola and sprayed the walls with it. Then the huge form was gone, and left behind was a ragged, quivering doll of torn flesh and blood-soaked clothing. Matson stared up at the security camera, his dying eyes pleading with mine, and then he jerked once and was gone. The entire thing had taken perhaps 3 or 4 seconds. My eyes swept over the other security monitors as a sick sort of fascination settled over me. Prisoners were straining to the front of their cells, shouting things out, trying to get enough of a look to see what was going on. I realized they couldn't see what was happening. They could only hear. They wouldn't be able to look out and see the transformed McFinn until he was at the bars of their cell. Fear, sick and horrible and debilitating, swam over me and tangled up my tongue. The creature had gone through the bars of the cell as though they had been made of cheap plastic, and it had killed without mercy. I stared at Matson's dead eyes, at the ruined mess of what had been his guts, at the detached pieces of meat and bone that had once been his leg and right arm. "Stars above, Harry," I thought to myself. "What the hell are you doing in the same building with that thing?" On another monitor, there was a replay of what had happened seconds before, and an aging black man named Clement went down beneath the creature, screaming as he died. Seeing what was happening set off some primal, ancient fear, something programmed into my head, a fear of being found in my hiding place, of being trapped in some tiny space from which there was no escape, while something with killing teeth and crushing jaws came in to eat me. That same primitive, naked part of me screamed and gibbered and shouted at my rational mind to turn around right now, turn around and run fast and far.